QSO Today, episode 490, Ham Radio Workbench, episode 201, where I was a guest. This episode of QSO Today is listener-sponsored. Only you can keep the QSO Today podcast coming to you every weekend since 2014. Please become a listener sponsor monthly or annually by clicking on the sponsor banner on the show notes page or at the top of the QSOtoday.com webpage. I want to thank Adrian Lambert, M5ADL, Robert Swain, W5APO, and Larry Classy, W4LEC, for becoming listener sponsors this week. It makes a big difference as we approach episode 500. Welcome to the QSO Today podcast. I'm Eric Guth, amateur call sign 4Z1UG, where I demonstrate the diversity and relevance of the amateur radio hobby and its impact on society by interviewing ham radio operators, many of whom played vital roles in shaping our technology through the amateur radio hobby. And while many people might say, "Ham radio, do people still do that?" this podcast demonstrates through in-depth interviews just how amazing, diverse, and dynamic the amateur radio hobby continues to be. When the Ham Radio Workbench podcast came to celebrate their 200th episode anniversary, George KJ6VU, the show's founder and MC, invited me to be part of the celebration. However, because of my weekly Sabbath commitment, I'm unable to join the group when they record on Friday nights, stateside. So George arranged a special session with me, and to my surprise, we were joined by Vince, VE6LK, and Mark, N6MTS. We would have been hour 5 of episode 200, so this episode of the Ham Radio Workbench podcast was episode 201. I'm replaying it here, in the case that you have not heard this podcast that I promote every week, but also as part of the QSO Today podcast permanent record. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did being a part of it, and being a part of the Ham Radio Workbench podcast 200th episode anniversary.
In this special episode, we talk with Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, from the QSO Today podcast. Welcome to the Workbench. I'm your host, George, KJ6VU. When we put together our 200th anniversary episode, one of the special interviews we did was with Eric Guth, 4Z1UG of the QSO Today Ham Radio Podcast. We didn't want to put that into the regular 200th anniversary show, but highlight it as a separate interview. So we're dropping it as a special edition here in the feed. We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Eric. Well, in this segment, we're joined by a very special guest, Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, host of the QSO Today podcast, and the impresario of the QSO Today Virtual Hamfest, and now the QSO Today Academy. And also in this segment, we're joined by Vince and Mark. Hello, Eric. How are you?
Hey, George. I'm great. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited, actually. I think this is the first time I've actually been with the other participants of the Ham Radio Workbench podcast. So I'm excited to be here. I'm so excited for your 200th episode. And I can say I've listened to every single episode.
That's I'm so sorry to hear it.
That's time to get back.
I love the Ham Radio Workbench podcast. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure and our honor, really, to have you here. And I got to tell you, one of the reasons why we really wanted to get you on the show for this special anniversary edition is that your production of the QSO Today podcast is a really important thing that you do for the amateur radio community. And you've really been an inspiration for us. And so having you on is really quite a treat. So we're really glad you can carve out the time, considering especially the time zones and everything, since you're coming to us all the way from Israel.
That's right. Well, what can I tell you, George? One of the things I have to tell you, I don't have the number of listeners that you revealed you had when you were with the Germans last week. But hopefully, if you've got that many listeners, they'll come to listen to the QSO Today podcast as well.
Well, truthfully, Eric, if I had only one podcast to pick, I'd probably pick yours, not mine. So, and I'll tell you that, seriously, I really mean that. There's a lot of podcasts and YouTube channels and all that stuff out there. But I think what you do with QSO Today is really different. It's different because what you've managed to do is to chronicle amateur radio. You have all these people who've done so many different things, and many of which have been really instrumental in moving forward some aspect of radio or technology or the hobby. And to document that, it's really an archive of ham radio history. I think that's an incredibly important service that you've done.
Well, thank you. I love doing it. It's probably why, as I'm coming up on episode 500 in another couple of months, I'm still doing it. I may still keep doing it because it gives me structure to my Friday, which is where I spend most of the day, you know, editing and building the web page, in addition to all of the other time it takes to record it. But it's a labor of love, and I love doing it. And I'm discovering, actually, now that I've done so many episodes, that I also like talking to just the regular hams, because they are doing things that are quite innovative. You know, you think that the guys that get most of the print in the amateur radio media are doing a lot of interesting things. Your average ham on the street is also doing some amazing stuff. That and then the new ones, the hams that have only been in for a year or two, are breaking all the rules about what we can do in ham radio.
No. Right? Excuse me. They are ruining ham radio, quote unquote.
They're ruining ham radio.
Yeah, exactly. In all the best
innovation,
ways.
Innovation. Right.
Yeah.
In all they're the best creating ways. New rules.
They're creating new ham radios. So, exactly what they're doing.
So there's a phrase that we've used for that, which is, you know, when the new guy comes to the ham radio club, assuming that he's not finds it boring,
chased away,
then, you know, when if you happen to ask the new ham, well, what do you want to do? And they say, well, I want to do, I don't know, mesh networking or whatever. And the old curmudgeons are like, oh, we don't do that here. And the phrase we use is like, that may not be your ham radio, but that's their ham radio. So you should embrace that and be thankful that there's somebody who actually wants to come to your club meeting and perhaps participate in something with you.
Well, I think if we're looking at what Arden, you're looking at what all of the JS2 call, for example, I think the guy that made JS2 call didn't have a ham radio license for 6 months before he wrote.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, that software.
Wow.
So new ham, I think it's just amazing that they're not these new hams are not Mark, what's the right word? Contaminated by old thinking.
Sure. Maybe they haven't been indoctrinated.
That's
yet,
a hard word. I'm gonna take a lot of heat for saying that, but
no, I think that's very true. The other thing that I also think is important in this hobby is you have this interesting dichotomy. You've got what we should be doing is embracing new stuff, even if it makes no sense to us who've been in the hobby for a while, right? And at the same time, there's such a deep history that I think it's really important for new amateurs to understand what came before them and help them put things in context. And it's fine to question things, but it's important to also understand that things didn't start because you just got a license. Things have been going on for 100 years. So I think you really need to have that balance. And one of the things about QSO Today that I love is that you have a lot of guys who you've interviewed who have had a long history and go back to be able to comment on major changes that have happened in the hobby or new technologies that we totally take for granted today. So it could have been going from AM to sideband or from let's say, the introduction of packet radio or FT8.
Crystals to PLL.
Yes. So all of these things are really important for people to understand, to give them some context. So that way, when you break the rules, you kind of know what you're doing, too. So I think that's a kind of a balancing act there.
Or that, remember that transition period we went from 2-meter FM crystal controlled to synthesize, and people were using like the GLB synthesizer. Do you remember that?
I do, actually.
So, and it had the hum, you know, the clip, like they had vibrators in their trunk, you know, along with their vibrator power T44 or T43. So, yeah, those were great times. And the fact is, if you've been in long enough, then you see that evolution, and you see that we went from just a few operating modes, single sideband, CW, RTTY, maybe slow scan TV was kind of starting when we were were getting in. I keep bringing up as an example of a new ham, a new ham that came in at COVID, and that was I interviewed in episode 459, Bo Amber, K6EAU from the San Francisco. And what the reason I keep bringing him up is like, here's a guy that he has this kind of understanding of amateur radio. He's learned some fox hunting technique. But he gets up every morning at 4 o'clock when his local airport releases a weather balloon, and he chases it across the Bay Area, yep. and most of the time he recovers the sonder on it, and then he converts them to amateur radio and he uses them for his own balloon experiments. I'm thinking, that is such a clever idea. Now, would I do it? You know, I wouldn't do it, but it adds one more layer to amateur radio that, you know, we wouldn't have thought of.
And I just heard free radio is what I heard myself, but
yeah, free APRS speaking.
You heard that too. Yeah. With a GPS tracker in it. Right. So,
worse.
So you, I think that's a great example. Like I'm imagining if I were my younger self and someone said, okay, look, you could either come over to my basement and play with my wall of radios and talk to some guy three states away, or we can go DF a balloon and go track it down. What sounds more fun? I mean, honestly, I'd be after the balloon. So, yes, it's not at all.
And you get two chances a day.
Yeah.
Right? Because they release them at 4 and 4. So from his airport, he's got two balloons a day, 7 days a week. I mean, it's kind of like POTA in the sense that you can just get your stuff, go to a park and do it. But if you want a daily activity, I mean, you could do that instead of your exercise.
So, by the way, now that we're into this rat hole, which is very typical of the show, I'm curious, are there hams in Israel that launch the high-altitude balloons and then track them? Is that a thing there?
You know what? I think that the Israel Amateur Radio Club, there is a science academy in Herzliya where they actually have a club station and they do classes for hopefully teenagers and other people. And I think that they've done some from there, but it's not as regular. Our population here probably is less than 500 active hams. Now, there used to be a couple thousand active hams, but that was before you could call the United States for less than it costs to to charge your phone for all intent purposes. But it used to be, when I was here in 1981, it was like $2.70 a minute to call the States. So you call your parents, you go, hi, we're fine. Everything's fine. Are you okay? Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Okay. Bye. You know, because the minimum wage in those days was $2.10, $2.20. So that was an hour's worth of work at minimum wage in order to make that call. So now you can call over the place, as you know, and we're talking now. I mean, who would have thought? 50 years ago, who would have thought, right?
Yeah, totally, for free.
15 years ago, who would have thought we could harness the power of a personal computer into a device that fits in the palm of our hand?
Amazing, yeah. No, 40 years, over a little bit over 40 years ago, if you were a freshman at UC Irvine, you only got computer time between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. So you're using the Sigma 7 mainframe to do your thing. And then all of a sudden you say, Tommy's. We could do Tommy's.
Oh my gosh. It's funny you should say Tommy's. Here's a rat hole in a rat hole. So Tommy's, Beverly and Rampart, original right. Tommy's. 1 a.m.
That's where we would go.
Chili burger.
George knows exactly what you're talking about.
I'm there, man.
That was terrible. Your breaths, everyone knew where you were when you came back to school. And as you recall, George, kids would go from every campus in Southern California. They'd drive an hour. UC Irvine was an hour. People would come down from Santa Barbara. People would come from Riverside. You know, they'd say, oh, we have to do a Tommy's run. And they do it in the middle of the night. And Tommy's was open, 24/7, I think. So,
all right. Those of us who are not familiar with Southern California joints, what is Tommy's?
All right.
Yes, thank you. Please.
Tommy's is an old burger stand. And it the original Tommy's, it was just this little shack. And they made chili burgers. And I think they might have had hot dogs. But the chili burgers were fantastic.
Hot dogs had chili on them, too. Chili was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, chili and onions was their specialty.
Onions, naturally.
And it was in kind of a shady part of town. And if you went there at like midnight, then, you know, you would be there along with the cops and whoever else isn't asleep.
And all the students.
And all the students, yeah.
Oh, man. And they didn't have tables. They had a standing like a bar, you know, that bordered the sidewalk. So you were kind of right on the curb, almost into the street, eating these amazingly greasy,
delicious,
high calorie, right. Delicious. But at that age, you could eat anything, and it didn't bother you. But by the way, Tommy's website is still up, and you can actually see the history.
Oh, no kidding. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, now they have branches all over Southern California.
We'll have to find that and add it to the show notes. Eric, we are tickled pink you're here. What's on your workbench?
So on my workbench, I built all-star nodes like crazy, maybe because our infrastructure in Israel isn't always working. So I'm building an all-star node for my car. I'm putting it in a Superman lunchbox because I found a Superman metal lunchbox like we had when we were kids. So
I love the creative reuse of other cases.
That's right. It's the nostalgia, you know, to have a, you know, to take it to a hotel, you know, you plug it in. I'm trying to figure out how to do it all without having to open the door so that it looks like a lunchbox with an antenna coming off the top. And so I've got that. I have to figure out how to, I'm making a system for switching the antennas in and out so that when I'm in the car and the car's running, my mobile radio is talking to the antenna on the roof and the All-Star node is talking into a dummy load. And when I turn off the car, the All-Star node's running on a battery and it's connected to the outside antenna. So I can still use All-Star as I'm away from my car. Using my portable radio, so
you need a 2x2 matrix in the car, yeah.
Yeah, so I bought a bunch of antenna coaxial relays on eBay they're brand new, but they were cheap, and they're made by one of the big antenna relay companies that you would know, but I can't think of at the top of my head. So I've got the All-Star node projects.
So what are you using for the node itself?
So I'm using the little CM108 USB boards. So I adapt those for use as the interface to the Raspberry Pi, and I'm using one of the little Baofeng mobile radios portable radios you buy for $12. And so every time I go to America, I buy a couple more, you know, to have them in my stores for when I want to do another All-Star node. So that's on the All-Star side. I've got the All-Star repeater that I had over on, I had it over on a hilltop that, you know, sees most of the, of Israel, on the Mediterranean side. The only problem is it didn't see my house. So I was unable to use my own repeater. And so it's right in here now, and probably it's going to go up. We have bomb shelters in our houses. My bomb shelter's on the top floor. That was a building code from the first Gulf War. And so I'm going to put it up in there, and I'm going to put an antenna in the attic, and probably that repeater will run around the house. And it'll cover quite an area, but it just won't cover the whole whole coast. And I'll put something else over on the radio site there. I'm very intrigued, George, that you're doing your own repeaters with the Tate repeater. So I always like to look at, I have a bunch of Tate mobile radios, and I discovered that the repeater looks like the mobile radios in a repeater case. So
yeah, boy, sometime we should talk about the Tate. I've never used them before, and I was lucky enough to get I'm trying to remember the model number, 8200 or something like that, and it's not the mobiles. The older Tates are little modules that look like they might
right.
be. So the one I have is, I think, a newer generation where it's still modular, but there's no way these are mobile radios, but they're incredibly industrial strength, and the Eric, you would just love the features, because you can log into it through Ethernet, and you can monitor all of the key points inside the radio, and it gives you a whole. It has a web server built in. It's amazing. So Sometime we'll have to talk about that.
That's out of my budget. All of my Tait radios I got for like $20 a piece. And I have a bunch of them. But no, that sounds really great. So I have the repeater. I have a Kiva. I've written about a Kiva in my blog. A Kiva is a 9-year-old grandson of a friend of mine. And while my children did not have an interest in electronics or amateur radio, and my grandchildren don't seem to, my friend who has this grandson says, we're unable to keep him entertained. Could he come to you and learn electronics? And I said, sure. So for the last 4 months, he comes to me to work on electronics. We build stuff. I got this idea that I have a neighbor that has cerebral palsy, and he likes to play his Roland electronic piano, but some of the keys weren't working. So I took the piano from him, and Akiva and I took it apart, stripped it right down to the keys, and rebuilt it. And so as we're putting the keys back together, I say to Akiva, I said, Akiva, why do you think people don't fix their own electronic pianos? And he says, because they think they can't. And I said, I think that's absolutely right. I think, do you think you can? He says, oh, yes, I can. So, you know, I get a chance to indoctrinate a young man on that he can fix anything if he wants to. He just has to want to, and that he did most of the work by showing him, you know, how to use the tools and to put it back together, that there isn't anything he can't do. He's only 9 years old, and so he's not doing, he wants a radio license, so he's deficient on the math. So today he was here, and we worked on, I made him learn his timetables. You remember when you had to memorize your times tables? And he says, oh, I know, why do I have to memorize the times tables? I said, because you're going to see that when you're a rocket scientist and you're about to send a, you know, your orbiter off to Mars, because you know how the math works, you'll be able to look at your output and you'll say, there's something wrong with this. And it'll be instinctive. And you'll say, if I know how the math works, then I'll know that this is going to Venus and not Mars. And so he likes that. So that kind of gives me a reason to, you know, get up in the morning is because I'm indoctrinating somebody towards amateur radio and the electronics hobby. And as I say, today we were doing long division because he came back and I said, what did you do this last week? He says, oh, I memorized the times tables. I said, okay, we're going to do long division, but we're going to do 4 digits left of the decimal point and 3 digits to the right, and we're going to divide it by a 3-digit number. Do you think you can do that? He says, well, I don't really know. I said, well, let's see. So we started doing it, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, yeah, I can do this. And I said, why are you doing this? It's because I memorized my times tables. I said, good for you. So
almost like you knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
And now this break. The QSO Today project that includes this podcast and the QSO Today Academy is now listener-sponsored. There are no commercial sponsors who influence the content and opinions expressed on QSO Today, including my blog posts. Disclaimer, we did not have a problem with sponsor influence when we did have commercial sponsors. The world is different now. I believe that commercial sponsorship, where you watch and listen to TV, radio, YouTube, Facebook, and X for free, does give sponsors complete control over all that you see and hear. The largest networks are now dominated by international corporations who decide in their boardrooms what we hear, know about, how we vote, and what we buy. Commercial sponsorship models for podcasts don't work, maybe for good reasons. At QSO Today, we are back to blogging and podcasting for the free expression of ideas, discussion, and the dissemination of content without commercial sponsorship. It takes everyone's ideas and approaches in our discussions to formulate our own way with the best information available. This has always been the best formula for success, even in ham radio. So QSO Today is now value for value, following the model created by another ham, Adam Curry, K5AAC, inventor of podcasting and the value for value business model. I create valuable amateur radio content that you consume. In return, you find it valuable, then you reward the podcast with your sponsorships, donations, transcription sponsorships, and using the QSO Today Amazon link. Your supporting the podcast in this way keeps QSO Today podcast coming to you every week since July of 2014, now approaching 500 episodes. In addition, we have over 500 educational ham radio videos from previous QSO Today virtual ham expos that we also publish to allow every ham to benefit from these excellent presentations. However, all of this content has to be produced, edited, curated, and hosted on commercial platforms by me and my team to keep it easily accessible and available to you. Links and banners on the show notes pages allow you to show your support of the QSO Today project. Please support QSO Today with your sponsorships, donations, and using our Amazon links. And now back to our QSO Today.
You know what? What I love about that is that we talked about this recently. I was thinking back when I was a teenager, and I didn't know nothing about hands-on anything. But I fell in with a bunch of hams who were all about building repeater systems, as you well know. You know the same guys. And what I learned was these adults would approach a project like, yeah, we could do that. You know, like, let's go dig a big hole and pour concrete and put up a tower. Like, yeah, we're just going to go do that on Saturday. And I'm thinking, I don't know any of this. Or how to even use any of the tools or anything, but doing what you're doing by, you know, showing a young person that this is all doable and you could do it is so inspirational on a deep level that he may not even really understand at the moment. He's just learning stuff right now. But what he's really learning is that he can do stuff, and that by example, it's so important to show people, whether you're a kid or even an older person, that it's totally doable.
Learning how to learn. You know, what you're teaching him is not multiplication and division. You're teaching him how to learn and why learning something is more advantageous than just the specifics of what you're learning, because now you can apply that lesson to other situations, and it benefits more than just the times that you need to multiply 4 by 5. Right. And confidence. That's the other thing is the big difference I've seen between the doers and the naysayers are the doers are just like, yeah, okay, let's go try it. And if we fail, there's no, you know, nothing lost except maybe some resources or whatever, but it's, you know, we can give it a shot. And then the naysayers are like, oh my gosh, it might not work because of this one little tiny thing. And then they just freeze up and they don't do anything about it. So it's that confidence and that willingness to try and fail and have to try again. And, you know, the willingness to go through that process, even though failure never feels good, but don't get locked up about it. Don't get frozen by it. And teaching that at a young age is critical.
Fail fast.
I like to tell him, I said, what's the worst that could happen? Right? Before you start a project, what's the worst thing we could do? Well, we could burn the house down. I don't think that'll happen, but with every project, the worst thing that could happen is we're not going to fix it, and then we're going to have to bring somebody in maybe that knows more than we do. But all of us are of an age where our parents or our grandparents had to do things. They had to repair things because there weren't repairmen and there weren't, we didn't have a disposable economy until the 70s. So it was just kind of taken for granted. I learned to fix things holding a light for my father in the garage every night. And that may, I'm guessing that's probably how many of us, you know, at least started getting the confidence to be able to do our own projects. You were saying, Vince, I'm sorry.
Fail fast and move on.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Right.
The only other things I have on my bench is I've got some QRP Labs kits in my drawer that I'd like to finish or maybe start them. I've got probably everything. And I'm doing one of the things that if you live in Israel and you're from the West, you want to have a VPN on your television so you could watch the different catalog from Netflix or whatever. And all of these guys have like ExpressVPN has changed the kind of VPNs that they're using now. So we have to change out the router. So I have some routers here that I experiment with to see which one is a better, more reliable a VPN router for watching Netflix or Amazon, you know, whatever the market is. And then I'm playing with Shelly Home Automation, which is very cool. Is these little modules here, and they go behind light switches or wall plates for plugs, and you wire them into the house current, and it attaches to your Wi-Fi network, and all of a sudden with your app you can actually control all of these devices. What's very interesting is that you don't have to be at home; you can be anywhere. It works with Home Assistant, which is a home automation controller, and so I'm playing with those too. So that's what's on my workbench.
So I can see in the Skype video that we have here, all three of us, myself, George, and Vince, all went to our browsers to go look this up.
Shelly and the link to Shelly Home Automation has been added to the show notes.
Added to the show notes.
Well, and this is typical of every show.
No, it's Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So if you want to keep it inside your network, if you don't want to use the Shelly app where it's actually it opens up a port outside and talks to Shelly, then you can keep it inside. And they make this one is for two. We have rolling shutters here. I don't know whether that's not an American thing, but we have rolling plastic shutters that go over the windows, and many of them have motors that control them up and down. The one I'm holding is for making the motors go up and down, and it's kind of cool. And they seem to be very reliable.
George, they have DIN rail mountable versions.
Yeah.
Oh man,
just noticed that.
I better text Rod right away.
Is your house, George, have home run wiring for all the lights and stuff?
No. Actually, we just put in a bunch of Philips Hue lights, so we're doing Wi-Fi light bulbs just for that sort of stuff. But I've done very little home automation. So I had a whole home automation system in the Valley, but when we moved to this house here, I haven't done that yet. But that's probably on the horizon.
It's much better than X10.
Oh, well, I imagine. Yeah.
Sharp stick in the eye is better than X10.
Sharp stick, yeah, that's right.
So,
but you know what? For some reason, it had a 30-year life, I think, the X10. So,
actually, I was using it at the old house. It was the derivative past Insteon, which kind of was the thing.
Is that like Z-Wave? Or?
Yeah, well, Insteon used either over the wiring or RF. And it was really a lot better. Well, of course, better than that old stuff. But yeah, now there's all kinds of other new things. You know what I found was even with the whole home automation system, I hardly ever used it, honestly. It wasn't really a big motivator for me. But I'm curious about one thing along those lines, Eric. You mentioned Arden earlier, and I'm just curious, right. is there much Arden activity in your area?
There should be a lot of Arden activity in there. There's nothing. We have an all-star, WhatsApp is a big app here. Everybody uses WhatsApp. There's, for my street alone, there's 10 WhatsApp group, WhatsApp for when is the minion, WhatsApp for who's taking out the trash, WhatsApp for who left their lights on in their car on the street. So we use WhatsApp for everything. The all-star WhatsApp group, in Israel, has everybody doing POTA. So, there's a lot of guys, who before the war were schlepping out to parks or to places and operating, trying new things. We have a network of all-star, believe it or not, all-star repeaters up and down the whole country. But you build all this infrastructure and then nobody talks on it. Yeah, it's a little frustrating. I look, in America, it could be frustrating too. I mean, because of DMR and all these DMR groups and all of these all-star nodes and all these all-star groups, you create all of these silos where there aren't any people, or there might be two people, but occasionally when they're on, they're not on at the same time. So I'm just, I would like to see Arden. I'd like to see a whole... I'm looking at a product right now called Meshtastic. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it uses LoRa channels. And I'm thinking of it as a way to communicate in case all the cellular services go down. So, in fact, I was looking to buy two mesh-tastic nodes today to start experimenting with to see whether or not I could, first of all, get the street on mesh-tastic just to see if they, you know, if it could be an emergency communication system in case the stuff hits the fan.
Yeah, I would think that would be useful since it's unlicensed, and I'm not sure in Israel if they have the 433 ISM band. Is that a thing there?
Yeah, what ends up happening here is, like, for example, the Bluetooth frequencies used to not be, they were military frequencies, but, you know, as soon as people would come to Israel or people would come home, we have a huge population that commutes to the United States every week on airplanes and then comes back. And
that's a heck of a commute.
I can leave Israel at midnight Israel time, and I can be in California at 4 a.m. the same day.
Yeah.
It's a 4-hour flight, Mark. I mean,
it's very long hours. It's a
16-hour flight. But I'm saying is that you can literally be, you know, in the States the same day. But you're a little tired from it. But the point I was making about Bluetooth was is that what ends up happening is that people start bringing Bluetooth items from the States here, and all of a sudden the country is overwhelmed with Bluetooth, and the communications authority says, well, you know, are we going to win this one? And so they'll actually give up the band, the Bluetooth band for Bluetooth devices. I'm seeing the same thing right now with family radio service radios because, you know, family radio service in America is on with the 460 splinter channels, and the family radio service in Israel is called PMR UHF or PMR 446, is actually in 446 megahertz, the same as the amateur band in America. So you get all of these radios coming into Israel, and people don't know, you know, they don't know, you know, it's a radio, they should just work, right? So I can see where the communications authority will have to surrender those family radio service channels to family radio service just because there's no way to get their arms around, you know, the problem. Yeah. So that's how it happens here. It's not, you know, I'd like to think it was by design, but
yeah, sometimes you can't hold back the rain. You have to just kind of go with it.
Right. Even though we're region one here, and you guys are region two, you know, IARU or what is it? Or yeah. So, unfortunately, that crossover can't be helped just because of the traffic.
So we talked about what's on the workbench. So do you have any other plans for 24 besides what's actively on the workbench?
I'm at a point where it's kind of, you know, I don't know how long the war in Israel is going to last. My sense is it's going to last a long time. I don't know whether that affects, you know, what I'm doing per se. I'm talking to you. I'm still working. I still have clients that have issues to keep our economy going. We still have to work. There's a side of me that wants to do another QSO Today Academy, so we could talk about that for a second. You know, I created the first virtual ham radio convention in August of 2020 with the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. I think we did six of those. They were, you know, each one was increasingly less successful in terms of the numbers on the one hand. On the other hand, we learned a lot about, you know, how to create videos. All of you guys were contributors. Thank God for you. And what it did was it created a library of over 500 amateur radio videos. So one of the things I'm doing this year, and I haven't discussed this with anybody but you, but I might as well. I'm just talking to the four of you. Or the four of us. It's just the four of us.
We won't tell anybody.
Nobody else is listening at all. Nope.
I'm actually just thinking of putting everything up on YouTube as probably one at a time. I'm putting everything up on YouTube. I may put it up on Rumble in case I get kicked off of YouTube again. It's up on Vimeo already, and most people can find it. And I may just remove all of the paywalls and everything like that that might be blocking that content for every ham radio operator. I figured, you know what, it doesn't really belong to me. It really belongs to the ham radio community, and I think that they would benefit from it. I think I'm going to keep doing the QSO Today podcast, and if there's enough people that would say, hey, you know, we could do another Saturday QSO Today Academy and have 25 presentations, I would do that. But it's a huge amount of work. Fortunately, I've kind of automated everything, so I don't need as many people to do it in terms of all of the back office. It kind of does itself now, and I probably should use that investment and do it again. So what do I have planned for 2024? I think there'll be one or two academies, hopefully, and the podcast will keep going, and all of the content will be available. I can't take it with me. I've been to a number of funerals lately, and I've noticed when I look in the hole that there's no podcast content in there. There's no videos. There's no, you know, you leave the world the same way you came in, and so therefore it behooves probably me and the amateur radio community if I just put it all out there and let everybody enjoy it. And if it's not all out there right now, it's because I've had some technical issues that I have to work out in order to be able to just get it all up there. So that's what I think is going to happen in 2024.
I do want to point out some very good things that have happened because of your QSO today, at least very good things for me, to me. One of the presentations I gave at QSO Today Ham Expo was about common mode current jokes, where to use them, why we use them, and more importantly, how to measure them. And at the time I gave that presentation, I was still employed by my former employer, and I had a lot of people come up to me after the talk and say, the hardware that I built during the presentation to measure the common mode current choke was amazing, and where can they buy it as a kit? And at the time, I was still employed, and I was not in the business of selling kits, and I didn't want to get into that business of selling kits. And I just told them, I'm like, you know, it's not that hard for you to build yourself. I showed you how to build it in the talk, but it's not a business I want to get into. Fast forward, I think it was like 6 months, and I was no longer with that employer anymore, and I was spinning up a business, and the very first product I made, and is still now my best-selling product, was that exact kit that those people were asking for. So my common mode current choke test rig kit was inspired by QSO Today Ham Expo. And it is my best-selling kit to date. And, you know, I want to thank you for that. And make sure that you know that you have had a huge positive impact on me specifically, but in the community as well. And this is just one of a bajillion examples I'm sure people can come up with about how what you have done has helped people. And this is my one most immediate story, and I wanted to make sure that you heard it. So
well,
thank you.
I'm embarrassed, but well, thank you so much for telling me. I really appreciate it. I actually had somebody after the academy tell me that the reason that he was still eating and in his house was because he launched a business and advertised it in the first expo. And I thought, wow, you know, I was just trying to have fun. You know, I was just trying to kind of save the world from COVID, you know, when all that stuff was happening. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I appreciate your saying so, Mark. I think it's very gutsy. George knows this. George has been marketing products for years. Very expensive products for years. I don't know. Have you made a fortune, George, doing it?
On the ham radio products? No, yeah, no, of course not. It's like the old joke. You know how to make $1 million in ham radio.
Start with two.
Exactly.
Spend two, yeah. They used to say that that's how you made to be a millionaire in Israel. They used to say you have to bring $2 million. So that's not true anymore. I mean, I think we've got over 1,000 millionaires in Israel now are 10,000 millionaires, something like that. And we've been very successful from the high tech standpoint. But Mark, no, I appreciate that. And it's very gutsy what you're doing. I listened, you know, week after every 2 weeks to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast, and it's gutsy to market a product and keep. I mean, I know you have to keep going back to the grindstone and, you know, revise and upgrade, but
yeah.
there's nothing you can do that's better, in my opinion, than, you know, keep refining and working, and you'll hit it big at some point.
Yeah. It's not as gutsy as you might think. I did not leave my previous employer and say, I'm going to go start a business. Me leaving my former employer was not entirely by my choice. That's a whole nother story that we're not going to get into here. And I intentionally took some time off to kind of unmess up my head, to kind of give myself some mental time to recuperate and whatnot. And a project I was working on, personal project, kind of turned into the business. But it's not like I left Amazon going, woohoo, let's go be an entrepreneur. You know, that's not exactly how it happened. It wasn't that kind of gutsy. It was, this bad thing happened to me. How do I make the best of this situation?
Yeah, but you know, sometimes those bad things are what you need to kind of relaunch and go in a different direction. So, I mean, I look at all my bad things as, you know, it was good experience, but, and I'm glad I moved on.
But you learn a lot in those experiences. I mean, that's
right.
You know, it is really true that whether it's a success or a failure, and as Vince, as you said, you know, fail fast. I mean, I think that's the trick. Failure is fine because that just means that's one thing you've figured out doesn't work. So you can move on to the next thing and the next thing until you get it right. So I think it's important that to get okay with failure because it's going to happen. But it's just a matter of, you know, how well do you deal with it and then drop that and try something different until you become successful. It's very rare that out of the chute you're going to be successful the first time.
Experience is what you get immediately after you needed it.
That's so true.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it for sure.
My other favorite version of that is good decisions come from experience. Experience come from bad decisions.
Very true.
But you know, the thing is if you hadn't tried it, you wouldn't have the experience. And I think that if I look at all of the people that that have been guests on the QSO Today podcast, and with some exceptions, of course, is that none of them would have gotten where they got to unless they did something gutsy and bold. You know, and that's what it really takes. To make it even in your job to say, well, wait, you know, I'm going to die on this hill because I think it's so important. And I'm thinking right now we have Voyager spacecraft that's radio systems built by HAMS that are out beyond the solar system, still sending data back. Television created by HAMS, cellular telephones created by HAMS. I think that, you know, as contributors to the human race, I think we've done a pretty good job. We shouldn't stop, but I think we've done a pretty good job. And I think I hope that the podcast, you know, at least if you listen, you know, to the episodes that demonstrates that in fact we've made a big difference.
That's for sure.
And now this mid-show break. Every 2 weeks, I listen to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast with George, KJ6VU, Vince, VE6LK, Mark, N6MTS, Thomas, K4SWL, Michael, VA3MW, and Rod, VA3ON, and their guest on often topical and important projects in amateur radio. This discussion amongst the regulars and their guests remind me of the conversations that I used to listen to on 146.94 and 146.46 megahertz in Orange County, California, while working on my own workbench almost 50 years ago. It is amazing how much practical ham radio knowledge that we can absorb by listening to the Workbench podcast that starts to make sense when we start our own deep dive into our own projects. So join me by listening to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast now and as George and crew push beyond 200 episodes. You can get to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast by clicking on the banner in this week's show notes page. And now, back to our QSO.
So in the spirit of
continuous,
in the spirit of continuous improvement,
a little bit.
If you had any advice for us for what we should be doing on the workbench, what would you suggest?
Oh, look, I'm so excited that you guys are getting to episode 200. This is, am I on episode 200?
Yes. Episode
200?
Yes, yes. Oh, episode 200.
So, yes. So I'm so excited that you guys have gotten to episode 200. And I remember when you started with Jeremy, and I remember you're thinking that this was going to be, you know, short-lived. And
10 episodes, baby.
That's... Yeah, who's gonna listen to these guys talking? I can tell you something. Why do I like it? The way I learned amateur radio as a teenager was listening to 9-4 in Los Angeles or in something, you know, in Orange County, while I was working at my bench. I always had a bench in my bedroom, and I had my little Heath kit, you know, the one that had the separate transmit and receive push buttons. Terrible. HW202, I think it was.
I remember terrible that. Radio. I remember the radio.
But you know what? It was on 9-4, and I would listen to the guys on 146.
Okay, I was going to say, is that 146.94?
No, it was 146.94. In Los Angeles, we didn't have a 3494 repeater, so 9-4 was simplex. I don't know what people use 3-4 for, but I don't recall anybody using it. And we had 146.46 was the remote base intercom channel. So if you wanted to listen to Robin talking or... any of the other guys who were always talking on there. So I would listen all the time to these conversations that were going on. And I learned so much just from osmosis. Yeah. So the QSO Today the Ham Radio Workbench podcast, excuse me. It's kind of the same podcasts. Thing. But for me, listening to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast reminds me of those conversations. The nuggets that you guys come up with. I mean, you go a little bit overboard on various kinds of sacks and nylon sacks and bags for putting bags.
You summoned them. Don't George. Say the word.
I'm holding back.
This wasn't me pointing this out for once. It wasn't me pointing this out.
No. Okay. But
thank you, Eric. Hand,
no. But I'm not criticizing. I love it. I love it because it causes me to think about things I don't think about. I'm always frustrated by throwing everything in my backpack, and I get to where I'm going, and I start to dig into it because I know I put it in there, and it's not there, and I can't find it, and I'm getting upset and frustrated, which I don't get every once in a while, and I don't have it. Then I get home, and I empty the backpack out on the floor, and it's in there. So I lost the opportunity to do something I wanted to do because I couldn't find it in my little tiny backpack. So it's these little nuggets that come out and say, you know what, I could do this differently and not be frustrated. And that's what I think the best part of the Ham Radio Workbench podcast is just these conversations going back and forth and the things that get thrown out serendipitously are so valuable. Yeah. That that's what makes it for me. It could be 4 hours, 5 hours long. You know, it's.
I think you know, that
it's a long form podcast.
So I think your comment is pretty spot on. Also, when I listen to QSO Today, because there'll be an interview. I mean, I almost like every episode there's a guy who did something, and I think I don't really care about that subject. But of course, it turns out to be quite fascinating because you kind of get the person's journey and how did they get to what they did, and by the end of it, you kind of go, well, actually, that thing that he does was actually pretty interesting, and I may or may not do what that person did, but it does cause me to think about something similar or inspire some other thing. So I completely appreciate your comment. We hope, if nothing else, that people do walk away thinking like, oh, that was actually pretty interesting. I should go do something and be inspired to go do it.
Now, I'm going to tell your listeners, there's a secret to saving money when you're listening to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast.
Is that the mute button?
No. It's listen to it while you're walking your dog and not while you're in front of your computer. You know, with your Amazon or eBay or what, you know, Alibaba or whatever, those browsers should not be up. because it can cause you to be compulsive in your spending. But for me, I listen to it as I'm either on my bench working on something, or I'm walking the dog. You know, I have a new dog, and my dog requires 10,000 steps a day. So I do 5 walks with her, and I listen to podcasts while I'm doing those things. So that is a way to save money when listening to the Ham Radio Workbench podcast. Otherwise, it's kind of like fast food. You're going to be compelled to push the button. I discovered Temu. Have you heard of Temu?
No.
God.
So Temu's like Alibaba with 1 week delivery from China. So it's terrible because you usually in Israel, if you buy something on Alibaba or you buy something on eBay from China, it could take a month before it gets here.
Uh-oh.
But Temu is terrible. Yeah, because it shows up in a week.
Eric, you're going to cause me to spend money. Do you realize that?
Oh, and they have all these little boards, George. You know, you want a buck converter board. Son, you want a little amplifier board for your...
It's more than just fashion.
Oh, my gosh.
How the turns table.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, there's a secret to using Temu. I've heard that there's problems if they have your credit card. So you want to use PayPal.
Good tip. Oh, see, even this segment is educational and useful. There's a couple of takeaways right here. Another place to spend money and how to do it safely.
So one of the things I'm doing for the war effort is I drive a patrol in the middle of the night in my car, and I need a blue blinking light on the top. And so now the city provides me with a car, but the brakes are so noisy that as I'm going down someone's street at 2 a.m, I wake everybody up. So I drive my own car, and I bought one of these little lights on Temu for 35 shekels. What is 35 shekels? $9.95. What a deal. And of course, I had to have the device that plugs into the cigarette lighter plug that also still gives me my USB. How much was that? Oh, that was like, 20 shekels. Was that $4.50? It's a good deal. So I'm able to satisfy, these itches with Temu and a week delivery. And I don't know how they do it.
That's amazing. Well, I have to spend a whole afternoon now cruising through here to see what they got.
Yeah, you have. It's the same stuff as Alibaba. It's just for some reason, the delivery is much better.
That's amazing. Well, Eric, thank you so much for spending the time with us. It's really been a treat, and I would love to have you come on and do a whole episode with us about either stuff that's going on in Israel or stuff you're doing, or just join us to hang out and chat about radio stuff. That would be wonderful.
So when you move your recording night to Thursday night,
yep.
I would be happy to join you. Friday night is hard for me.
We can certainly accommodate a different day. That's not a problem. No problem at all. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. And thanks for being such a good friend and being there. And we'll chat with you maybe on All-Star. I know you've been trying to call at times, and I've called you at times. Well, we have to make an effort.
I see Mark is logged in, but then Mark sent me a message that he turns the volume down because he doesn't want to be bothered. Mark, I can tell you something. You'll never be bothered there.
Yeah, well,
there's nobody there.
Yeah, I know. ADHD makes it difficult to monitor channels. I have my All-Star node at home set up to connect into 55915 all the time. So I will always be logged in if my node is working.
And I'm starting to monitor it more myself, as I have a node in my office and a node in my workshop. So now I can switch around. So. So thanks so much, Eric. We'll talk to you soon. And 73.
My pleasure. 73.
73, man.
That concludes this episode of QSO Today. I hope that you enjoyed the special edition in celebration of Ham Radio Workbench Podcast's 200th episode anniversary. Please be sure to check out the show notes that include links and information about the topics that we discussed. Go to www.qsotoday.com and put in episode 490 in the search box at the top of the homepage. You may notice that some episodes are transcribed into written text. If you'd like to sponsor this or any of the episodes into written text, push the sponsor transcription button in the center of every show notes page. Support the QSO Today podcast by first joining the QSO Today email list by pressing the subscribe buttons on the show notes pages. I will not spam you or share your email address with anyone. Become a listener sponsor monthly or annually by clicking on the sponsor buttons on the show notes pages. Your value for value support is recognized on the QSO Today podcast and in the weekly show notes. If listener sponsorship is not for you, then please use our Amazon link when you shop on Amazon. Clicking on this link before you enter Amazon will allow Amazon to pay us a small commission on everything you purchase. This is a very painless way to support the QSO Today podcast, and it costs you nothing. QSO Today is syndicated on every podcast platform by using Podcast Index. Use the latest Podcast 2.0 player on your smartphone to automatically get to your podcast updates as soon as we publish. I'm now using Podverse to track, manage, and listen to my podcasts. Positive comments about QSO Today on social media is appreciated as it helps to grow our listener base. My thanks to Ben Bresky, who makes this podcaster and guests sound brilliant. Thanks, Ben. Until next time, this is Eric, 4Z1UG73. The QSO Today podcast is a product of KEG Media, Inc., who is solely responsible for its content.